Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we get into the podcast, I'd love it if you hit subscribe. And give us a little review at the end once you've listened. It just makes the podcast go and keep going. So I would love that. I'm trying not to die from coughing right now. Podcast time. And this week I'm really excited about the guest. Ferry Corsten needs no real introduction. And if you don't know who Ferry Corsten is, you will know who he is by the end of this podcast. However, Ferry has been at the top of the trance scene for many, many years, starting in the mid or the late 90s, and still going. It always amazes me when I sit down with people on this podcast and talk to them that they've been in the industry for over 20 years. It's kind of really humbling to me, and I get a lot from it. And from me getting a lot from it, I really hope you do. So I'm going to stop blabbering on and introduce Ferry Corsten. So without further ado, Ferry Corsten. Ferry Corsten, what's cooking, man?
Good, yeah. It's back on the road again, all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah, man.
I thought it would never come, and then boom, it's here. I thought I would ease in, but it was not. It's just like bang.
I feel you. Well, thank you for coming on, man. Thanks for taking the time. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on. How's life?
Good. Like I said, busy again touring, trying to balance now with, you know, how it was during COVID, where you had all the time in the world in the studio. Now there's none. Yeah. You know. So it's just it baffles me how, you know, before the pandemic, everything was had its place, right? Touring had a place, studio were had a place, the whole all the logistics around it were fine. It was just like a well greased sort of machine, if you will, right?
Yeah.
Like we're juggling again. Like, okay, how and when and what and but
what do you think that is? What do you think the juggling is? But we did it beforehand, easily, fine, right?
Yeah, that's fine. I was trying to figure it out. You know what? Why is it so hard to just get a grip on? Touring, of course, that you know, but finding the time and space and whatever to be in the studio again and get the inspiration that, you know, you would be getting before the pandemic within 2 days and you had a track done and, you know. And so to me, I mean, that's different for everybody else, I guess. But I really feel like I'm really longing for them, for those few weeks, you know, attached to be in the studio and to just dive and nerd out and all of that stuff.
That's the thing that I've struggled with most. Yeah. Not really struggled with, but like pre-COVID, I was like, very regimental with my studio, and like I knew that studio happened when I was downtime, when I was like during the week. So I tour on the weekends and then during the week get in the studio. And for some reason, like, well, I started the podcast, which takes a shit ton of time up as well. And like, I just started doing other things. And then those other things seem to have just got in the way of the one thing that I need to do the most, and that's producing.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I guess also from I mean, in my situation, I have two kids. And, you know, when pandemic started, my son was, he was like 4 and a half, almost five, you know, and now he's eight.
Yeah.
Just eight. So it's a different person from 3 years ago.
100%. Right? Yeah.
Different needs and stuff. So I noticed that as well. That's just slightly different. And
how is it being a dad whilst touring?
Yeah, I mean, look, in the beginning it was just like something that I was touring, and then came the kids, right? So the kids grew into me being away, and for them that was normal. But then they had me 24/7 for you know. And my daughter's 14, so she's like, "Yeah, cool. All right, bye, Dad." but my son is like, "Are you gone again?" You know, he's really now he's really aware of that I'm gone. And before that was just normal to him. And then after having me all the time, you know, now, shit. Oh wait, what's that?
Power's out. Okay,
power goes off. Hang on. Sorry for that. Stephanie, did you switch off the power?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, okay. No. It's fine. Don't worry. Cut that out.
Really, we're good. Does the family ever travel with you?
Sometimes. I mean, my wife's Filipino.
Yeah.
So we used to pair the two, right? I mean, just do family visit in the Philippines, and then from there I would travel Asia.
Yeah.
So that would be nice and comfortable in a way. So they would be there. I didn't have to fly so far, you know, from Manila. Pretty much everything's within 4 hours max. So that was good. But yeah, you know, I don't know how that's going to work out now since you know, school schedules are a lot more rigid now than before.
Well, so, that's the thing, isn't it? Like you said, like the kids grow older and they have more responsibilities, and you have more responsibilities as a parent to kind of take on rather than when they're just a kid, like, or a baby, like you can take them anywhere. It doesn't have to be anywhere.
So, but yeah, I mean, you know, we might find a way. I mean, this past summer, we got ourselves a place in Austria.
Nice. So
we're like big ski snowboard fans, and love the mountains. So we made the step to buy something there and spend the summer there. Wow. So I was doing, you know, we were there and I was traveling from Austria to various places.
But Austria is beautiful, isn't it? I've only ever been to Vienna, but it's amazing.
Yeah, Vienna's a beautiful city, but when you get to the mountains, man, it's just like, wow. I just love being in the mountains. It's amazing.
Yeah, there's something about being in, like, nature for me, like, no matter where it is, I don't know, it's like nature, this sounds really weird, but nature and the cinema are like two places where, like, I just shut off completely. My phone just goes, like, I don't think about my phone, I don't worry about anything else, and it's just like time to switch off and just enjoy it.
No, that's it. That's like peace and quiet that you know, you can really find yourself there. You know, just don't have to think about anything else. Just retreat in a way. That's really what it does to me. And especially being in Austria in the mountains, it feels like it's like a cleansing type of thing almost. Being cleansed. Sorry, just have to open a gate for me. 1 second.
No worries, man. No worries. How important do you find, like, the balance between, like, you've been doing this for years, like, how long have you actually been touring, like, full-time as a DJ?
I would say from...
I was trying to work it out myself, and I couldn't.
I would say, I mean, when the whole touring bit started for me, after I released System F Out of the Blue.
I believe
that was, like, end of 98 when it came out.
Wow.
So... And initially it was mostly UK because it blew up first. So I was in the UK every weekend, you know, especially with the bank holidays, the long weekends and everything. So So I consider that touring because I was away from home all the time.
Yeah.
And Asia came, and then Australia, and then America. So yeah, ever since 98, pretty much on and on. Yeah.
So 20, my maths is awful, but 25 years, 28 years.
Yeah, we're now 22. Yeah, so let's say 23 years, maybe yeah. 24 years.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty impressive to be.
I don't want to think about it. I
was thinking that there's like 23 year old kids that are like blowing up now, and they're just starting, and you've been DJing the whole career.
And that's me. I want to think about Carl.
I know, right? Carl Craig, like all those guys, like just. I had Kevin Saunderson on the podcast,
right.
And like he's just been like when he starts talking about the 80s, and I'm like, Jesus, I wasn't even born then. Like, right. It's just another level of like legend status.
I would be glued to his lips as well, man. In that sense, you know, like with my ears, like wow, because I mean, I got so much inspiration from, I still get from the 80s stuff, you know.
Yeah.
The 80s was the era that switched me on to liking other music than just the top 40 stuff, you know.
Yeah,
I was what, 8-9 years old when I was when all that real big stuff happened. And I'm not talking about Pet Shop Boys and the more commercial. I'm really talking about, you know, stuff like where would I go with this? I mean, there's tons of different 80s stuff that I really liked. Man Parish, Hip Hop Bebop, that kind of stuff, you know. Hashim, yeah. It's Time. All that almost like the breakbeat electro type of stuff, you know. I was really into that when I was a kid. And yeah, still love it to this day. I think it still sounds so fresh when you listen to stuff from that era.
It's funny how you have like this era of this period of music when you're growing up that you always listen to for the whole of your life. Like I was in Ibiza yesterday and I was having lunch with friends, and there was like MTV like 90s hits that came on the TV. And I was like, damn, they don't make music like they used to. And I was like, I remember my parents saying that, and I remember my brother and sister saying that. And it's just like, we're just stuck in our own, like in this period of time where we loved, and nothing is ever going to beat it.
That's very true. I mean, you know, the 80s, I grew up liking other music. The 90s, I grew up clubbing. So, you know, I got that whole, really lived that whole time, that period. He lived it. So, and you know, yeah, like you said, at MTV, it's a shame that it's not here anymore in that sense. And every generation has their thing, right?
Totally. Yeah.
So, but if, you know, remembering coming home from clubbing and there was MTV on and with the chill or whatever, just the fact that the most random of ambient kind of weird tracks, very super underground, even had a music video, you know? Being played on MTV. That's almost like you can't think of that anymore today, you know?
Yeah, it's really strange, the whole music video. When I started my label, it was the one thing that I wanted to make sure that I do, is that every single release I do is there's a music video. And that's like purely for my own egotistical kind of thing, really, if I'm honest. But it's like, I feel like for me, it's like music hands so well visually. And it's really strange that it's kind of been lost a little bit, because like shows are so visual now. It's actually a lot of the time more so about the visuals than the actual music, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. It's the case. It's true.
Joe around the one guy that stands behind a table that the crowd doesn't really what's happening on top of it.
Exactly.
The actual visual part. And so I mean, yeah, the cool thing is, like, you know, I had a lot of music videos, you know, special, so back in the day. And now the new show that I'm doing, what the F tour, because it's all my material. I'm actually, when I play the track, the music video is playing in an editor, you know. So all these old music videos will be shown as well. It's actually really nice.
Yeah, I bet. Because I bet you have quite.
You know, like.
Say that again.
You see a baby fairy and a baby Armin together for a collab like 20 years ago, like smooth faces, like, you know, wow, okay, this is so much fun to watch, you know?
Yeah, and I guess the thing is a lot of the people that are coming to see you now, I know, I'm pretty sure your fan base has, like, gotten younger, as they always do, and you still have, like, the kind of the diehards that still love the old stuff, but like a lot of the younger lot haven't even heard that stuff, or like haven't seen that how it was presented in the original form. It's really interesting time.
It's amazing when I have these conversations. So for my radio show, I work together with Jesse, who's my and he's 22, 23.
Yeah.
So you know, he experiences music today in a very different way than I do, right?
Totally. And
so when we have these conversations, and he's talking about, oh yeah, I was heard, he's really growing up in this whole techno bubble that's so huge, right? So all the Charlottes and all the other girls that play stuff, you know, drop an old trance track, and he's like, oh man, that's so cool. You know, my friends all say like, yeah, this new techno is so cool. This is not new techno, guys. It's just like this is a. it's just amazing to see how perception is so different nowadays.
It's really interesting because I'm sure you've seen it even more so than me, and I don't want to sound like an old man, but it's fashion just changes and music is fashion, and it just goes in and out, and like a lot of what we're hearing is techno now is pretty much trance to a certain extent.
Just it has all the hallmarks of a trance track, you know. It has melody, there's a breakdown, it's just that the kick is fatter, and it's just all a bit more, you know, there's a bit more oomph to it than ever. But it depends on how you look at it. I mean, it's also very divided right now. You have the faster banging sort of tech stuff that you know, pick certain trance tracks from back in the day, or you also have like the Tale of Us and the Art Bats and people like that, and that sounds really deep and dark and just, but everything, all the elements in there, to me, that's just like, yeah, sure, that's just a trance track.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's trance slowed down, really, for me.
Different way, and made it cooler than, you know, the faster stuff in a way. But yeah, it's just it's beautiful music that's out there right now. There's a lot of stuff happening that is just really interesting.
Yeah, it is. And how do you feel about that when you're kind of, you're from the trance world, right? Or you're most of what you do is in the trance world.
Yeah.
And you see like not new genres, but what people perceive as new genres. How does that sit with you?
It in a way it makes me proud, you know, weirdly.
Yeah.
Because the stuff that I've been doing for so long, and now, you know, someone takes, whether it's from my tracks or other people's tracks from my era, right?
Yeah.
But someone now takes elements from that and just, you know, yeah, just presents it in a new way, a more fresh, modern sound. So I think it's really cool. The only thing I don't think is, you know, it's cool is actually when how trance has become a dirty word in a way, you know, and everyone, it's not even the producers and the DJs, it's really a lot more the fans of the techno fans, right? That trying so hard in every way possible to not call it trance, you know?
Yeah, I feel that because techno is cool now, right?
Yeah, let's be honest, it just is what it is. It's a trance record, and
I totally agree with you.
But you know, like, yeah, so on the other end, you know, when I speak to Joris Voorn or Enrico, right, and they're all like, yeah man, we were big trance heads, you know, we grew up on that stuff, love it, that's our heart is there, but our heart is with techno as well, and to mesh the two together, it's just great. But they also said, like, yeah, we don't understand why it's so hard to admit that it's just an amazing trance track, you know, that you like as a techno fan.
I don't know what it is. I really don't know where that's come from, because, like, for me, as I've, like, kind of grown into the industry and still learning so much every day, like, I've seen, like, how trance fans are, and they're the best fans in the world for in electronic music. Like,
they're very loyal is one word, but the word I'm actually looking for, I don't know, it's a culture in its own right.
Totally.
Almost.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And there's no other genre like that. Like, I've got friends that, like, one of my really close friends is like a manager of one of the biggest DJs in the world right now. And
right.
She is he plays something completely different. She is a trance head and will still go to a trance night whenever she possibly can.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And nice. It's like, I feel like you have you have your moment as a club goer. Where you like go listen to something, you're like, whether it's techno, whether it's tech house, whether it's like, I started listening to like when I first started playing, I'd play like soulful house. And then like I went into like the head candy route and things like that. And I loved that era, but like, and I still love soulful house, but would I go to a head candy night now if it was still around? Absolutely fucking not. Like I just really wouldn't. But like, I feel like the trance fans, they will just go for life and they're just there for life.
Yeah, I think you saw that already back in the day with you know the whole gatecrasher movement and the crasher kids, all the furry fluorescent stuff were. I think that has translated very much now to the States with all the candy stuff that what they wear, the sort of whatever the sticks with the banners on it. So. Yeah, it's definitely still there. It's really that sort of togetherness that you really see with the trance crowd. Absolutely.
Yes, yeah. It's amazing because we actually met years ago. You're never going to remember when we met, but I used to work for Cream in Ibiza.
Okay. All right.
So I don't know if you remember Tom Brown, who used to record all the podcasts.
Yes.
So I worked for Tom recording the podcast.
Right. Yeah. Come across you. Quite a few times, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And that, it always amazed me there when you have this island of like coolness, right? And then you have Cream, and Cream was like the pinnacle night on the island, especially after Manumission kind of left. Like Cream was the one. You had We Love Sundays on Space, you had Cream. And that was kind of the two big nights. Yeah. And I was always amazed that like even when trance went in and out of fashion during the last kind of period, the last like 4 or 5 years of Cream, like still how trance did so well at Cream. And it was like just a huge party. And I didn't ever really see it until I worked at Cream and saw the size of it. And it always amazed me, really. Always amazed me.
Oh. Essentially, like you said, like Cream was the pinnacle of that sound, but also in a way of British clubbing on the island, you know.
Absolutely.
But in a way, since trance became smaller on the island and Cream was still there doing it, everyone who loved trance was going there, right?
Always. So I mean,
Well,
it was like the only thing on the island that was giving you that.
True. Yeah. Yeah. There were a couple of other initiatives, especially in the turn of the century with the Judgment Sundays that I played for, they did it for what, 7, 8, 9 years or so.
Yeah.
That was great as well.
That was wild that night.
Yeah. So, but other than that, I don't think there were like many trance nights really.
No. It's mad. It's mad. How was it growing up in Rotterdam? You're from Rotterdam, right?
I'm from Rotterdam, yeah.
How was it growing up with like, how, because I'm always amazed how in the Netherlands the government kind of supports music. And it's always been like amazing to me. Like I'm from the UK and we have a very rich music history, but I wouldn't ever say the government gets behind the artist and kind of really supports them how they do in the Netherlands.
Yeah. I mean, over here, well, first, you know, the Netherlands. Yeah, I really think that the governments is very much, if government really supports just arts in general, you know, and it's a small market. So, wherever they feel that they can, so like help in a way to get a local product grow out, really, you know. It's just good for, I don't know, for the Dutch image around the world, really. You know?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, so in terms of music, they've always been very, very supportive. That's why we have, like, I think annually over about 1,400 festivals.
Yeah, it's wild. Crazy. It's wild.
Yeah, it's wild, exactly.
And you have so many artists, like, I don't know, outside of the dance music world, because I don't really kind of pay attention to, like, more of the pop world in the Netherlands, but you have a lot of artists, that a lot of DJ producers that are from the Netherlands that are extremely big.
Yeah, and also behind people, you know, that there's, like, producing for other artists.
Exactly.
It's funny. I always make the joke there's something in the water here. I don't know what I can't really explain it, but I used to explain back in the day, before dance music became sort of like global and started to adapt a more uniform sound globally. In the beginning, there was a typical British sound. There was a typical Scandinavian sound. A typical German, and then, you know, Belgium and France, but they're sort of like disco-y type of stuff. So, and I always used to say, I think, you know, since we're smack in the middle, I think we just
get everything
from around us and, you know, put it in the blender, and voila, there's us, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, nowadays, I don't know how much true that is, because, like I said, I feel that I can't really hear that a record is a British record or a German or a bit more the same, or, you know.
Well, I think with the internet, you have so many more ways to hear sounds that you like, right? So, like, for me, like, I'm pretty sure, like, if you heard, like, a garage record, you'd be like, oh, my God, that's very British. But it could be made by somebody in Japan. Like, you just never know. Nowadays, you never know, which I think is actually amazing, because I think it then gives people, like, let's say, for instance, like, for you, when the System F record came out, you said you were, like, just touring in the UK to start with. And it's amazing how you can kind of get a fan base in a certain area. And, like, some people have fan bases in the most random places. But, I have friends that just have just touring South Asia, right? Or, like, Russia, when you could tour in Russia and things like that. And like, how did you get hurt? Like, how did you get big here? And then they're just like, I don't know, but it just happened. And what was that like when you kind of first got to that first touring point where you were like, I don't know why I'm going to the UK so often. I know my record's doing well, but, like, I'm here.
Well, weirdly, I never really wanted to be a DJ.
Oh, really?
Funny enough. Yeah, I always wanted to just produce music. That's it. I being in my studio, my little domain, you know, that's the place I love. I was a very homey sort of person, you know, out of the year on vacation, it's more than enough. You know? when I made Out of the Blue and we started sending promos out, you know. Well, first of all, I knew already it was a sound that wasn't around. It was very different from anything else that it was around at the time, you know. And then the introduction of the JP 8000 at the time was with big super saw, you know, sort of characteristic sound for the JP, made that track already really, like, from a sonic point of view, also really, like, stand out. So I knew there was something different, and when we started promoting it, you know, we almost did it in a bit of a rebel way. We not like oh yeah, we sent out normal white labels and stuff. We just really went crazy with, you know, scratching out the serial number. We had one side pressed and the other side had an inscription or something, Out of the Blue, something to blow your brains out or something. I don't know. We went all out, crazy stuff. And
were you doing that by hand?
Yeah, the with the scissors. Yeah.
Oh, really?
We sketched it out. I think we had the inscription just done in the pressing plant. They did it. We also cut out from newspapers, like, individual letters to make some sort of, like, a ransom letter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah, and then we sent it from a undisclosed address, right? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't untraceable. It was untraceable. The only thing that was on there was, without the country code, just the mobile phone number of at the time Michael Perron, who's now, you know, Armada, the Ma in Armada. We worked together then at this label, and that was the only thing that you could reach someone behind this project, basically. Yeah. So if you were an A&R at the time, you would always get these like perfectly, mm-hmm. you know, neatly pressed records, and all of a sudden there's this thing, you know, you're like, oh, what's this? Who has the balls to send like that? So let's listen. And then the track was different. I mean, we felt like, okay, this is the right approach to just make it stand out. And all of a sudden, boom, it was there. Everyone was chasing the record. Mm. And within a few days, it was signed. Well, Pete Tong said, like, okay, I'll come over. I'll snatch it up. So it was signed to Pete Tong's label. Records.
Was that FFRR?
Yeah. And within weeks from that, I got my first phone call from Ministry of Sound. Like, hey, this record is blowing up. Do you want to do Transnation?
Yeah.
You know, a mix up for us. And I've played a few in a club. I've never really played in any, like, not real. I wasn't really a DJ, right? Yeah. I could mix records, but then when you can mix records, that does make you a DJ. Mm. So here I was in the UK mixing that album, in London. And then the first phone calls came in, like, Homelands at the time, the festival, and like Cream. And okay, it's like, wow, all of a sudden I was in these clubs that I could only read about and clubs, like, wow, here I am, I'm doing this. And it was really weird. It went real fast and very gradually at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden I was just there and playing all over the country, running up and down the motorways, right? And just, it's nuts. It's a really crazy sort of reality shift for me at the time.
Well, I guess also if you're used to just being in a studio and then hearing people want to hear your music live, it must be it's a crazy feeling for all of us, right? But I think especially for that first time, like, I've personally never had like a hit record. I've had bigger records, but I've never had a hit record like that, where it's like it completely changes your career from like the get go.
Mm-hmm.
But it must be wild when you're, how old were you when that happens?
I was about 24, 25, maybe.
Which is super young at the time, especially in the 90s when like there's no social media. There's no one had mobile phones. Like, you're on vinyl. You're like, by yourself, like going from Homeland and then going to like England with a bunch of reprobates taking God knows how many drugs and and raving in clubs.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, special days. But that's for me then. I'm sure, you know, a young kid nowadays who has the same dream and, you know, sees or hears his track being played by David Guetta on main stage at Tomorrowland, you know, it's going to have to say, then from there on, there's many examples of kids that had their breakthrough because of something like that, you know, and then all of a sudden they're just touring themselves. And a beautiful thing that I saw recently on Instagram, I think, was Ben Hemsley, who's now up in the UK, right? And he had a few posts of his set at Creamfields at that massive stage where he played.
Yeah.
And just the it's almost like what I really loved about watching that, it's almost like the sheer disbelief in his eyes, like, is this really happening? Yeah. It was just so cool to see, because I was there at one point and I just was like, you know, just having the same sort of reaction at the time. So it's really cool to see that.
Yeah, it's so nice to see somebody when they have got to where you think you never could get to, but you got there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. Yeah, absolutely.
When was that moment for you?
I actually think my maybe my first time at Cream in Liverpool.
In Liverpool, yeah.
I think I played Homelands before that, but I never really knew about Homelands.
Yeah.
I knew it was a festival, but so to me, it didn't have that sort of like, oh my God thing. But Cream, I knew about, and
yeah.
You know, I had the season, I had, you know, all Paul Oakenfold, Cream, oh, ooh, the whole thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And there, Paul Oakenfold was playing, is always, right? It's just like this legendary thing I'm now part of.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely that moment.
Yeah, it's funny how those kind of, you have those first moments and then they start happening more and more regularly. And then it kind of turns into your normal life, right? Like, how often are you playing in front of huge crowds in festivals that you look back and go, 30 years ago, my teenage self would never have thought that this is where we're at.
Pinch me, right?
Yeah, it's kind of wild. It is wild. And realistically, there's only, let's say, 100 artists in DJ, like 100 DJs that actually are really experiencing that. So we're super blessed that we're going through these experiences in life and being able to do what we do. We're pretty lucky.
Oh yeah, I tell myself that very often. Just like I really feel blessed in that sense, because I know there's like millions of guys who want, and only a few that get the chance to do this, you know. So yeah, I really, you know, it sounds almost a bit like but yeah, I kind of thank the universe quite often, like, thanks for making this happen and making me do this, you know.
I always like get asked this, and I'm sure you do more than me, but it's like, how do you get there? Like, how do you get to that point in your career? And I although, like, a lot of it's hard work, but I would say majority of it is luck. And I don't like to kind of play down what we do.
No, but yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it's a combination of quite a few factors. And definitely luck is one of them, you know. Meet the right people at the right time, be at the right event, and do something that reverberates further out, you know. And Or make that record that changes people's lives, you know, by accident. Because, look, we're not in the studio sitting, you know, drawing it all out. Like, this is how we're going to make the record. And then it just happens, right? It's just, you land your hands on, and there's the melody, and boom, you have the right sound. And just, or even it's a shit record, but it just resonates with the crowd.
that is real, though. That's the real talk, really, is that
maybe that's part of the luck, where luck comes in. I don't know, right? But
because I think that's it is, you never know, right? And like, everybody you ask, no, they always say, we never knew this record would be the one that hits.
Yep.
Never.
Yeah. And I think that's the beauty of music, you know. It's in the end, it's how people experience it. And what I'm amazed about is, you know, look, the room behind me, that's my little studio.
Yeah.
Same as you. You're there most of the day.
Yeah.
You know, that's your bubble, your life. You create something, you're happy with it, you put it out in the world, and then it leaves the studio and that's it.
Yeah.
Chapter closed for you. You move on to the next track.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, this thing starts living its own life.
Yeah.
And doing its own thing. And you know, when I play somewhere in a random place and someone comes up to me like, you know, this and this track just changed my life, I was in a rough place, and you know, blah blah blah, and you hear these stories sometimes, wow, you know, I mean, it's just amazing how much more something that you do with passion, how much more comes from that, right?
Well, I think, yeah, I totally agree with you, because I always have that saying that when the record's released, it's not my record anymore. It's everybody else's, and they can kind of do what they want to do with it. But yeah, it is mad when you get those messages, or somebody tells you like, this record helped me get through some tough times, and you're like, I literally just made that in my pants in my studio, like, not thinking about anything.
I
think that's the amazing thing about music, and I guess I look back on what music has done for me in life outside of my job, and I think, like, well, yeah, like, some records have like gives me the best memories of the happiest times in my life and gives me memories of the saddest times of my life. And that's what music can do. And without sounding cliche, it's I don't know what we would do without music, because it's the only thing that doesn't answer back to us, right? It's just it's just there, and you can do what you want with it.
Yeah,
it's pretty special. It's pretty special.
I'm glad it doesn't answer back.
Exactly. I want to talk about highs and lows of a career, because like we've just worked out, you've been full time in this industry for a long time, and throughout a career, it can't always be like at the top of, and it can't always be high, and it can't always be at the bottom. If you know what I mean, there's always a way up when it's at the bottom.
It fluctuates, you know, and in the beginning, your first high is just an amazing high, like, oh my god, the world is mine, da da da, and then comes the first point where you notice, like, oh, hang on a minute, you know, I'm not in the same demand anymore as I was a year ago or half a year ago or something. I mean, a good example was when Out of the Blue came out, I followed it up with Gorilla, followed up with a Carte Blanche. I did the remix for Willy Morbid, I'd Ask for Strings, remixed U2. It was like bang, 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 one after the other. The magazines in the UK were all like, oh yeah, he's the producer, the man of the moment, da 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 da. And then came Sasha Digg with Timo Maas, all the prog stuff.
Yeah.
They were pair of course and shit. That's like a commercial shit, you know? Like, oh yeah. And so from one moment into the next, it's like, oh, okay. So yeah,
How does that feel though? Like realistically, like feelings wise, like how does that actually feel when you're there and experiencing it?
It hits you, because you're so in your high and your bubble and your oh, let's do this, you know, I can do this. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, but hang on a minute, I think I have to, it's time to regroup, you know.
Yeah.
And at first you're just like, you're also not used to negativity,
yeah,
because it was all, you never had to deal with such, in a way, negativity in your life before.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to give that a place. Okay, but luckily enough, I was pretty quick to say to myself, look, you know, you can't simply not please everybody.
Yeah.
And you can play for 1,000 people, and only one in the crowd has to say, everybody's like, oh, amazing, amazing set, amazing set. There's one person in the crowd that says, like, you're shit.
Yeah.
That's the one you walk away with, not the other 999.
Yeah.
You know, so we seem to be much more sensitive to negativity than you know, than positivity. And it took a while to give it a place, but yeah, I told myself, like, look, just deal with the punches. This is part of it, and try to just come up with, like, you can only pay the negative guys back with another punch record.
Totally.
And then I think the next one was punk. So in a different sort of sound, you know?
Mm.
So, and it's been going like that pretty much, you know, ever since. I mean, you gotta accept that it's not always up. There's downs as well. And without the downs, there can't be ups, right? So it's
totally.
Very, So,
say that again, sorry.
It's not easy at times. Yeah, it's, you know, it's like, oh, because you want that high all the time. So
But I like you said, is like, if you can't always have that high again, it's just a fact that the lows have to come. I think the issue is that when you get to the level of where you got to, the lows can be a lot lower than what you'd ever experienced before, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, the higher you go, the lower the lowest, because you're back to square one, or not always back to square one, but you're back to square two, and where you're at 100, if you know what I mean. So it's like, it's almost like a classic drug addict, right? They always follow, always chasing that first high, and it's never going to happen because
it's going to ever.
It's never.
Everything that is new sound feels more intense, you know, and but you know, after 25 years sorry, anyway, I don't want to say I got used to it, it's never nice, but able to give it a place and just deal with it in a different way.
Do you feel that still happens for you now, though? Because I feel like from an outsider's point of view, I feel like once you've had those highs as an artist, like highs and lows at the beginning of your career and throughout, like there comes a point where you're just like, this is just my life. I'm just accepting that this is where I'm at. And if somebody wants to book me, they want to book me. If somebody wants to see me, they're going to turn up and see me play. Like, and I feel like there's like a space, for everybody now. And I don't think there was necessarily 10, 15 years ago, but now in the market of like the internet, everything, there's space for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, it's very important not to be confused with like complacency, you know, because it's not like, oh yeah, I don't give a shit. I just do whatever people like me or don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's a bit of that too. Because, and this sounds in a way, it's like walking the ass, right? Of saying the right thing, and people maybe it's like, oh, look at this. But that's not what I mean. If you think about it, you are your artist. You are the artist that you want to.
Yeah.
In order to make that next main stage slot, if you will, do you stick to your sound or do you sell yourself to the devil, right? And that's a real fine sort of line to walk. And everybody has their own choices. Everyone, you know, some of the DJs out there that have chosen that route, and there's DJs out there that have chosen to stick with their own thing. The way I look at it is like, look, I became this artist by doing what I do, and people started following me.
Yeah.
In a way, here comes the tricky part, but I say it anyway. In a way, it's like, okay, the sheep and the shepherd, right? Mm.
Yeah.
And I feel art, an art form, is because the shepherd takes it somewhere and the sheep follow.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to, when it starts to be turned around and the shepherd starts to follow the sheep, if you will, and you start doing stuff just because your fans want that, I don't know if that's the thing you really want to go for all the time, you know? Well, maybe every once in a while, but.
I agree with you, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, but I don't necessarily think it's necessarily just about what your fans want. I think it's what you see other people in the industry that are doing. And
good point.
And it's like seeing, oh, the industry, like at this moment in time, loves a tech house beat with a 90s hip hop sample on. Like, oh, I have to do that to be in the cool crowd, or to be popular, or to be anything.
Yeah,
and I think. Yeah. That's the interesting thing. And whilst you're saying that, I'm literally thinking like in the art, like that painting and painters and like the art world, and kind of like, look at what Banksy did look, kind of, he wasn't trying to be anyone else. He was doing what he just did and he did it well. And look how big he was and how big he is and how many people came from that. And kind of I feel it's the same in music. But there is a point where you like, you have to be happy writing what you're writing. You have to enjoy it.
I agree. I mean, I don't think I could be really good at, you know, putting a show on with music that I really don't feel.
Mm, yeah.
You know, and so if anyway, if that's my destiny, then that's my destiny. You know. But that's like, it's not to be confused with complacency. Totally. Like I don't give. You know, but I have to be real to myself at first in order to bring the music that I really want to bring out. And
Have you ever had that in your career where you're like, I'm not too sure why I'm doing this and I need to make a change?
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I get, but I'm not really sure what point of this. Let's see. I think a good one is actually the moment I mentioned earlier, where after all the Out of the Blues and stuff, you know, I was just doing that. I was already getting a slightly bored of it because when you're in the studio, you know, you probably experience it as well. You do too much of the same stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes numbing, right? Mm-hmm. It's not exciting anymore.
Yeah.
The crowd loves it. Here's another trance that sounds exactly like 50 others before.
Yeah.
But I'm in the studio like, okay, I do the same thing again. So I kind of want to move on. And I've always been a big sort of electro head, you know, and also slightly based on the 80s, and here I was just experimenting with some stuff, and all of a sudden there was this punk, you know, it was a different track, and this also came a little because of like, oh yeah, you know what, you're all tired of me. Well, yeah, I'm kind of tired of this music too. I just died, so fuck it, I'm gonna do whatever I like right now. I don't care, you know. But I need to do this. I need to move on, and I need to get happy in the studio again and sit here like, oh my God, rocking, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, I think, example. And there's been a few more throughout my career where I felt like, okay, you know what? Yeah, I'm tired of this. I just need to move on. Mm.
How good is that feeling? Because it's a really interesting feeling. I don't know if it's the same for you, but it's you as an artist noticing when that time of change needs to happen. And then it's the process in between the time in between when you need to make the change and realizing you need to make the change and trying to make the change. Like that process is for me is like a hard point in it. It's hard.
Yeah. Because of course there's always the little angel and the devil on your shoulder, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Do it now. Yeah. And then the other one says like, yeah, but you know, you make a lot of people happy with this, what you do, and shoot you. Mm. So be or whatever, take your time, you know. But yeah, sometimes you just feel like, okay, no, it just needs to happen because I need this right now.
And then how about you, for you, like when you, okay, you've accepted that you need to make a change, but then you need to work out what that change is in the studio. Is that a quick process for you? Because for me, that takes a while.
It's a little trial and error as well, you know?
Yeah.
The first attempts I may not be instantly happy with, or I feel like, yeah, it's there, but it's missing something. It's just, it's not legit yet, you know? And then you put a track out like that, and the instant feedback is from your fans like, what are you doing? Okay, yeah, but yeah, bear with me, man. You know?
Yeah.
Hang on, you can do it.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm the same with artists that I absolutely love, and then they do something different. I'm like, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
But you have to kind of take that. It's all when, like, I've got, like, we all have favorite artists, right? And when, like, they're out, I don't really listen to, like, electronic music in my personal life. I kind of try not to.
Yeah.
And there's, I like, let's say, for instance, like, I don't know, somebody that I really like brings out a new album. And I, like, actually, before I comment on it to anybody, I have to listen to it, like, 3 or 4 times at least, just because I'm like, I need to live with this music because otherwise I'm going to hate it because it's not like what they released last time.
Yeah. It's really unfair to hate instantly. I really want to stress that to all the fans watching now and, you know, listening. Just like, but I know it's your first response, your first emotion, like, you know. But a lot of thinking and a lot of time and effort went into that album that you're listening to that you don't like right
massively.
Now.
Massively. You
know, artist has been struggling, like, am I making this jump to something else? Trust me, every artist has that. And it's a very uncertain period when that album comes out for that artist, you know. But you will notice, I always have that. The same when I go through the same thing as you have, like, don't think I like this, but I need to give it a chance. Just listen to it a few times. And then eventually these sort of like one or two favorites on the album start appearing. And you listen to those. Then after a while, you start to listen to the other one that is also pretty cool. You know, and eventually that you're getting sucked into the whole, almost like the thought process behind the album, what those guys, the artists, you know, or the girls went through and why that album sounds like it is doing right now. So, yeah.
It's funny how our brains work, right? And I don't think they ever change that it's that instant gratification. We want the instant gratification straight away.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same with everything. It's, I don't know, maybe not when you first started releasing music because you didn't want to be a DJ, but like, I think I can relate, like that first record I ever put out, I wanted it to be the biggest hit in the world and be the biggest artist in the world straight away. And it takes you years to realize that it's not going to happen like that. And if you want it to happen like that, it's never, ever going to happen like that. It's when...
And to be honest, you should also ask yourself, do you really want that to happen like that?
Exactly.
Your first pick you've ever done, because you're only dealing with downhill from there.
Yeah.
Unless what are the chances that if you're like a super, super big smash, what are the chances to even top that on your next, you know, that's just so incredibly small, that chance.
Well, I also think like we're seeing that more and more nowadays, especially in the pop world and how record labels are working and how TikTok works, where like a record pops off on TikTok.
Yeah.
Record labels go and fight for it and pay the highest bidder wins. And then the artist is huge for a couple of years and then they're gone. Because that first record that they wrote or that popped off was literally like their 10th record they've ever made. And they don't know how they did it. There's no like, that's luck, pure luck.
Yeah.
And it ruins people's, it ruins people, I think. I don't really agree with how it's going at this moment in time, personally.
Yeah. I mean, the one that did well probably is someone like Billie Eilish, you know?
Who came
from that world, I guess, and then also blew up and had like a hit after hit after hit.
But I totally agree. And I love what she does. Like, I listen to her a lot and I really like her music, and the production that Phineas does is insane. But I think the difference between her and like the God knows how many people that have had hits in the last like 5 years or even 2 years, like pre-COVID, just after, during COVID and post, like Billie is, and there's a few other artists similar to her, she has serious talent and she's doing what she wants. She's so authentically her, which I think it goes back to what we were just talking about, is that it's like, if you're authentically yourself, like there will always be a market for you, whether that's 10 people or whether that's 10 million people, there will be a market for you. But it must be tough. Could you imagine being Billie Eilish, like being like 18 and that?
And that, that's hard, man. Like, good luck on her in the sense that, you know, she put the bar pretty high for herself with that first one.
Right? Yeah. I mean,
and when she comes up with an album that sounds slightly different or pretty much different from this, then, you know, it's going to be
must be tough.
It's gonna be
you must be tough to do that.
How
do you find, I know we kind of breached on it a little bit, but how do you find touring after the pandemic? Are you finding shows different, or are you enjoying it as much? Because like, we had a lot of time off to like be whatever we wanted to be, like kind of normal people, like just sitting around like not doing anything with our lives. How is it for you now?
I gotta admit that it was a lot harder to get into the hamster wheel, if you know what I mean. Than I anticipated. Honestly, you know, during COVID, there were a few markets where I just had a show here and there. Croatia was one of them that was open for like a small window in the summer. So I got some beach party where I played, and it's like, oh, nice. But this was after a while of not doing anything. And then there were like a few more throughout the pandemic. And then I think my first real tour again was going to the US when that opened, you know. And going there to the same clubs that I used to play before pandemic, so with memories pre-pandemic in my head, you know, and then you go there and it's just the numbers weren't the same and the vibe was different, and you could really sort of, now when I look back at it, I can give it a name, but you could really see like, oh, there's still some hesitation and people were still stuff at the time. It's like, oh man, this is it.
Game
done.
Over. Yeah, yeah.
Get it. It's the end of touring. Yeah. You know, like, but now, you're like, this was October last year. So yeah, almost like a year ago. But now it's really just pretty much back to pre-pandemic situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So the only thing I'm struggling with still is sort of like what I was said in the beginning, you know, when we started this chat, it's just finding the balance again between in the studio and touring. I really personally have a feel right now that I haven't been in the studio actively really, really producing for about half a year.
Yeah.
It's not entirely true, but that's how it feels to me. Like, man, it's like I really want to be in this room for so badly, but I just don't have the time and I need to get that back in order.
It's how do you think you'll get that back?
I mean, the agenda this year is still quite a few makeup dates, you know, that were already booked pre-pandemic and moved. So I had a long discussion with the team here, my agent in the UK and also in the States, and say like, look, you know, the only way I can get back on track with that is just to sort of like be a bit more exclusive on which shows to pick and not just, you know, fill out every weekend completely, you know. So take more weekends off in between and just get these sort of week and a half, 2 weeks periods in the studio where I can read and just like get switched on again and really just, just exploration again as well. Because now, right, you have like 2-3 days in the studio. What do? You grab the sort of things you know will work, and it's, you know, oh, here's a new track, and it's not that, a bit more time in studio will get me there.
Yeah, so I think it's very easy to just go to what you know, right? And and then it gets back to what we're saying, where you just kind of get bored of what you're doing, and the studio is not fun, and the studio is a job.
That's
how I found coming out of the pandemic, where I'd written so much during the pandemic that like when I tried to write again after touring again, I was like, this just isn't fun to me anymore. I'm just writing for the sake of writing, because it's all I know what I should do in my downtime is to go in the studio. And it's like, it's a very strange feeling that when you're just like, not really too sure what to do.
It is weird, especially because, you know, since up to the pandemic, you're always pretty sure your navigation was on point in a way, you know. And right now, also throughout the pandemic, there was no purpose, right? You were just sitting in a studio writing music. Yeah. There it was, banging stuff or more chilled and relaxed stuff or whatever. There was no next week's show that you had wanted to make a track for, right? Yeah. So that was a very sort of like very strange sort of sensation to be in a studio, almost like with a blindfold on, you know, like not knowing where to go and just liberating at the same time as well.
Well, I was going to say that because you're not writing music for a purpose. So, which is kind of what technically as an artist you're supposed to do to a certain extent. Like we're DJs, it's very easy for us. Like, oh, I've got a show next week, or I've got a fest. I'm playing Coachella next week. I have to make a new intro record for Coachella or whatever that is. Like, whereas,
you know, I mean, it's slowly coming back. I just need my like I said, I just really need my time in the studio now. Yeah, but fair. You had just had 2 years of COVID in the studio. Yeah, but again, that had no purpose. And now, you know, it's all in my mind. So the scene's going to look like this when we come out. You know, and then the scene is slightly different. So now I know what the scene is like.
Yeah.
And what I care and what is what resonates with me. So now going back into the studio with that in mind, you know, I feel like I'm going to get more on point again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it, going back to the trance techno that's kind of popping off at the moment, do you ever get that urge to make anything like that?
Yeah, in a way. I mean,
and be like, I'm the boss. I've been doing this for years. Like, just let me show you how it's done in a non-arrogant way. Like,
I know what you mean. Yes and no. It's not. I don't want to make music to just prove a point. You know, if I would do something like that, I mean, there's tracks out there, techno tracks that I really like. You know, I really appreciate good techno. I've always thought that techno and trance in a way would go really well and hand in hand. You know, sometimes the most unusual combination could be really good. You know, I mean, I can imagine like how trance would work really well in a different way with drum and bass, for example. And some of this out there, or has the sub focus stuff has a bit of a trancey sort of thing.
Well, I guess also you kind of get the like liquid drum and bass, which is very melodic drum and bass, really. Which trance is the most melodic kind of electronic music out there, in my opinion. It goes hand in hand, totally.
So I mean, you know, I think seeing the climate out there, what's happening right now, there will definitely be something of that, where I just rub shoulders with some of the techno sounds and you know the drum kits and whatever. At the same time, something that I'm also amazed by right now is what you see happening mainly in the UK is how this whole mid 90s sort of vibe is just taking over big time.
Wild.
It's crazy. And all the records that I hear are like that, they all sound like they were produced in the 90s, you know? They sound a little, I don't mean it in a disrespectful way, but they sound crappy. They sound like, that's the whole character of the style right now, which is, you know, that's right in my backyard.
it's interesting that, because like even like I did an EP on Trick on Patrick Toppin's label, and I use like the Rave Generator synth that's just literally samples all the old 90s synthesizers.
I
grew up in the 90s, so I remember that music. I didn't grow up with that music, if that makes sense. I guess my musical era was like early 2000s, like late 90s, early 2000s, like Faithless. And Faithless were like the ones for me. Chemical Brothers, Fatboy Slim, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, amazing, yeah.
But like, it's really interesting now because the people that are writing music never experienced that, and they'd never heard that. Like, it's only now that they're going back and hearing that music, which is really amazing to me that it goes to show how young dance music actually is. It's literally only like two generations. Like, someone's like talking to like Kevin Saunderson, like he's practically a granddad, if you know what I mean. Like, his kids are having kids, or like, which realistically is wild because they're the originators
of this whole thing. But you know what's really cool about that is when I try to make an 80s record, I'm making an 80s record how I think 80s records sound, you know?
Exactly.
And that's with with that 90s sound as well. You were probably too young to really live through it, but you remember it. So in your head, you're making a track that in your imagination, your reality, it sounds like that.
Yeah.
Which is different from the original stuff. But therefore, it has a new sort of twist to it. It has a newer vibe to it, you know, and it makes it modern with that sort of touch.
Yeah,
and that's what makes it really interesting again.
Yeah. It's a really interesting time. I'm like, there's parts of the scene that I'm really not excited about, and there's parts of the scene that I am really excited about, and it's all kind of merging into the thing that I really like now is how the internet kind of brings scenes across the world. So like, something from the UK that's popping off will then move to America or move somewhere else. And it's amazing how, as I guess with the streaming, there's lots of pros and cons to the streaming side of the world, but like, your music's being heard everywhere instantly. Like from the day of release, you might get a huge playlist in Australia and then you're the next big thing in Australia.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, the reach you can have right now and have in a way is.
How have you found that going from selling vinyl from in the 90s to CDs, MP3s, mini discs to like now? Like, what? How have you found that kind of transition?
I was never really thinking about it too much. I always embracing the new sort of medium, right? The new thing. It's just that when I look back at it right now, okay, so you have Spotify, which is a world of possibilities on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am really missing is music, not just being frequencies in your ear, but a product.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree.
You're basically right now you have nothing, just moving air. That's all you have. And what I loved about the vinyl days and the CD days in the same way is you actually could touch music. You could touch your product. You had the sleeve, you know, white label, this or that, or white vinyl, colored vinyl, the booklet, the inside of the vinyl with CDs, the booklets. You know, ours really went like a long way to just come up not just with a great album but a great looking album as well, and that's something that's missing right now. Brings me to another topic in a way. The one thing, and there's big debates about whether this is good or not, but I think that the new form of that excitement that people were looking for, like, oh, what did the artwork look like? Mm-hmm. You can get that back in NFTs right now. Yeah. You know, like a new thing where you feel like, okay, besides the music, I can have something visually as well that is cool. So I mean, there are definitely new and interesting ways coming again to get that part. But it's definitely the vacuum that we were in at some point. Where we were just dealing with a Spotify playlist, where it was just like there was no room for extended because everyone wants straight to the chorus, you know, because the algorithms tell you so.
Yeah,
you know, that's the one part I'm like, I don't want to be here, man.
Yeah.
I want to get out of that wind tunnel that makes everything the same shape. If you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, it's the formulaic that an algorithm kind of has changed, how the algorithm has changed the music industry, where you have to make it formulaic, otherwise it doesn't perform. And then you have the outliers like Burial and Joy Orbison, or like just people like that where they just don't give a fuck and they just put it out and it does really well, like Floating Points. Like his stuff for me is like, I listen to it and I'm like, maybe he does, I don't know. I've only spoke to him like once. I've only sat down with him over dinner for like a couple of hours, but like the music that he puts out is so unformulaic, and it still does extremely well.
Yeah, There's definitely music out there. I'm also a big fan of all the cinematic stuff and ambient, and you know, I've done an album under my Fair project, which is all just that stuff.
Yeah,
and I'm a big fan of like John Hopkins and same. Max Richter, and you know,
Max Richter is like literally one of my favorite.
Amazing. And I don't really think that those guys go into the studio like after like 5 seconds, we need to go to, you know, because otherwise the algorithms are not, you know. So it really also depends on the actual genre of music, right?
100%. Because I think with those genres is that they have these huge like playlists that we don't even come across that like absolutely. Are just like without kind of diminishing that their genres, it's just background music, and
it's used for a lot of people. Use it to just to chill or to study.
Exactly,
you know,
and, yeah.
It's such a world. It's because I did some digging and just man, it's just like we're so stuck in our dance bubble, and you know, and pop is sort of like part of that in a way. You know, that we think that that's how it works, but there's this fast world out there where, you know, music is just music as it was supposed to be, you know, and which I would back and dance again as well.
Yeah, it's beautiful when that is. And I think I totally agree with you with what you were saying about the physical product of like there was nothing better than going to the vinyl store. And I don't want to sound like an old man, but like I'm not an old man, but it's like there was nothing a not better feeling than going and picking up a vinyl or picking up a CD. Like, although I know CDs were kind of shit, really, they weren't the greatest form, but like picking up the CD, putting it in your player or putting it on the decks and like pulling out the back page and like being able to read, like some artists like did like full on like stories about each record and like what it was about for them and all the, and then you saw the people that worked behind the record. And for me, like, although I actually really like streaming, and I think streaming's been amazing for the bridge between physical and digital days, and it's a real way for artists to make money, which I think is what needed to happen to a certain extent. It's not there yet, it's not fully there, but it's a stepping stone to there. But I think my thing with streaming and like the whole subscription standard of for music is like it's like going into an art gallery and being able to take any art off the wall for free. And then being able to just put it back on the wall and go get another one for free and not have to pay for it. And I think that's where I struggle with how music is kind of treated nowadays, because there's so much of it that
exactly. You know, there's so much of it. There's also a lot of, you know, there's good ways and bad ways with this. You know, there's also a lack of quality control, I feel. Yeah. Everyone can put music out, but that also at the same time gives everybody an equal chance.
Yeah.
You know, so it's double-edged sword in that sense. So, but what I do like about the streaming platform is it allows me really quickly to find new artists. Like, oh, what? I follow that person, you know. Yeah. So your horizon widens so quickly with this, and So that's really what I do like about that. But it's just like missing the actual physical thing you can touch. Or
I agree.
If it were an NFT, something that is, I don't know, that adds more to just the music, you know?
Well, I think with the NFT thing, that I think the way to get more people in that kind of realm is to give a physical part of the NFT as well. And I think the NFT projects that will eventually do well, I know like crypto and all of that's kind of taken it's fallen out of his ass for a while, but like I think the way to actually get the majority of people over to NFTs is by giving them something physical with that NFT.
Yeah, because it's still very sort of vague for a lot of people to update. Yeah. I just did an NFT drop with Record Shop a few months ago, and for me to actually get my head around it, what what it is, apart from, you know, this, yeah, this this digital something that you own,
JPEG,
you know?
Yeah.
It's really, it was really, it took me a little while to get into the, to get into it and see the possibilities. And a good sort of solution was the actual combination with a physical thing, be it a cap or a t-shirt or like something else, right? So to make it a bit more real life,
you know? totally and I think this is like I've always said this to like my friends like about the NFTs, and I don't necessarily look at it as like just an online thing. It's a way for, like, I've always wanted to like buy art for my walls, if you know what I mean. And the art that I like, I can't afford. Like, it's just, it's just a fact that some of the art that I love, I'm not going to spend I can't afford £100,000 to buy a piece of art for my wall. If you know what I mean.
Right.
But NFT allowed people that can't afford art to buy art.
And
it allowed artists to, that couldn't sell their art for lots of money, to sell their art for money multiple times, which then meant that they're full-time in making art, which for me, I think the world is a better place, without sounding cliche and guru-y, the world is a better place when there's more people making art. That was my kind of theory behind the NFT thing. I don't like the whole stock bros kind of how that's all kind of turned into it, and it's like
it's
Wall Street on the internet, really.
Hey, that's just the investors getting, you know, doing a bet, you know. That's really what it is. And but the art part is cool. I do like that. I really support that.
It's pretty amazing. So you are, have you started What the F Tour?
Yeah. I did my my tour in the US. Did 10 dates in the US. I just did Australia. I just did Norway this past weekend.
Amazing.
And Ibiza tomorrow, actually. So wow. Yeah.
Where are you in Ibiza?
In Ibiza. There's a Trox in Destino.
Okay. Yeah. I've never been to Destino. What's it like?
Yeah, well, it's a resort. It has also the outdoor stage, but this is like the club underneath the resort. Cool. So it's I think also about 500 people or so. It's not really big, but it's super, and it's actually really it's going to be really cool, because with What the F playing open to close with just my music, you know, the people that come to these events, they know my music like inside out, right? So from start to finish, you get this sort of one big family.
That's amazing. People
singing to every song and stuff. And it's really, really cool.
Are you playing, is it all released stuff or unreleased stuff as well?
Unreleased stuff as well. Yeah. As soon as I have a new track on there, I'll try to just, you know,
put it in. That's nice.
Put it in, yeah.
How is it when you're just playing your own music, compared to like another set where you're playing other people's music? How does it feel when you're actually playing?
Well, obviously you know every track.
Yeah.
Every hi-hat, you know.
Yeah.
So it in a way it works really well to come up with that perfect journey, you know, speaking of cliches. But it's just really, really cool. Of course, I love playing new tracks by other people, just, you know, also for my own inspiration, and just to see how it works, and just because I like those tracks. But this, just something that you've always, at the time, put a lot of time and effort in to, and is a part of your own history and your own self. Just to do a whole night like that is, I guess it's just the ultimate DJ producer experience. You know, you only DJ what you produce, so
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? When I guess it's that, I don't know, it strokes the ego like a little bit to a certain extent, in the best way as well. It's like, I didn't have to play anyone else's music and it did really well. Like, it was a good night.
Oh, yeah, just putting it together was a bit of a, you know, it was quite a bit of a mission, because you're dealing with, you know, music that I produced, let's say, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
My track from yesterday, you know, and so I mean, for the what the F show, I it's sort of like a combination of Ferry Corsten, System F, and Gorilla.
Okay.
And for Gorilla and System F, the shows that I did under those names, I already decided to completely, fully reproduce all the tracks.
Oh wow! Right.
So I did for those shows. So they sound exactly like the originals, just more punchy.
Yeah.
So someone who hasn't heard, let's say, Out of the Blue for 18 years, and hears the new version of Out of the Blue, will not necessarily hear that it's a newly produced version. They will probably think like, "Wow, can't believe how tight this still sounds."
Yeah, he was a genius back in the day, still releasing music this good. have you ever thought about doing re-releases
of those newly? The newly produced ones, yeah. Well, not really, because I up to now, they only were like, the purpose for those were just shows. But might as well, since like the whole '90s sound is just, you know, it's just back, and this, so like some of these tracks are that, you know.
Well, I think that's the beauty of streaming, right? It doesn't matter. Like you can put a record out every week, and one might do really well, it might not, but fuck it, it's out there.
That's true. And, you know, again, it starts living its own life. So God knows what happens in a year from now with that track, you know. You never know.
Well, I think that's the thing, is especially if it did so well in the 90s or like early 2000s, like they are the sounds that are back now. And
true. Yeah.
If it sounds a bit more beefy and a bit more tighter, like, why not?
Yeah. Like I said, they were initially just produced for the shows, but yeah, that might actually be not a bad idea to just say, all right, you know what, I've done my thing with it here. Let's, you know, it's all yours now. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, that'd be a really interesting kind of experiment as well, and it could be interesting to like not tell anyone that this is a re-release, and just be like, here's a record.
Yeah. Put it out, here you go. Yeah, true.
Because like, there has to be a lot of fans that obviously still know the records, but there's also a lot of fans that don't. Like, that's the amazing thing about nowadays, is that, I don't know about you, but every time I go into a club, like, I play like no one there. I go in thinking that no one's there to see me, and no one's there that's paid to see me. And I think that way it's like, kind of gives me an opportunity to actually like work and be like, I have to win these people over.
Right. Yeah. And,
and it's like, I think it can be, we can become complacent when it kind of's like, all these people are here to see me, even though you might've sold a show out and everything like that. But like, realistically, like if you've sold a show out, how many people are actually know who you are? It's probably like one person, and they've told five of their mates that they have to come along with them, because that's it. So it's like, we have to win these people over. And that would be really interesting to see what re-releasing a record from
like that. Yeah, exactly. I agree with, you know, every look, and you know that people buy tickets to come and see you, but yeah, there's also, you know, the friends that haven't heard of you before.
Yeah.
And I also always sort of approach each show with the sort of like the notion of like, yeah, not everybody here knows me.
Yeah.
So I need to convince everybody. So whether this person has seen me 100 times or this person has never seen me before.
For me, that's always the best feeling, is when you get those messages after, or you get somebody come up to you and be like, I've never heard of you before. What's your DJ name? And like, do you still get that? Because I always wondered, like, do you still get that?
Not often, to be honest. Not actually, what's your DJ name? Not that question, but I do still get, like, yeah, definitely get people like, hey, yeah, I've heard your name, and I've, you know, my friends always talk about you, but I've never been to any of your shows or never heard of your music. And, you know, or last time I went with my friend who told me to go, and so discovered you that night, and then did some, you know, the Spotify searching, and oh my god, wow, you know, it's still really cool, man, to just get that. It's just, yeah, this is what we do this for, right?
Yeah, it's the best feeling, man. It's the best feeling.
Yeah.
We've nearly done an hour and a half, so I just want to kind of wrap this up with one more question.
Yeah.
And this isn't music related, but I've started to ask some guests at the end of the podcast, and that question is, if you could give anybody one piece of advice on life right now, what would it be?
On life right now? I just tried to just look at myself, how I go around in life, and it's just really being myself. Right now, the world, especially with all social media, it's just such a fake and phony place. You know, Everything made more beautiful than it really is. So just be yourself and just believe in yourself, really, because that's, you don't have to be that superstar model or a superstar DJ out there to just, to get there, man. Just believe in yourself. You can do it. And it's just like, as long as you really believe in yourself, you can do it, and you work hard enough, then you eventually get somewhere. And but most important thing is be you, right?
Love that.
Yeah,
love that, dude. Lovely to meet you. Lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Fun.
Keep in touch. Thanks so much for coming on. And I'm sure I'll probably bump into you at some point in a festival at somewhere in the world.
For sure. Sounds good, man.
Thanks, mate. Keep safe. See you soon. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
And that is a wrap. I hope you enjoyed it. Please hit subscribe. Please give us a little review. Share it with your mates if you enjoyed it. And thank you for everybody listening. See you next time.
Every day, we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you are ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.